You're gay now?
No, I'm not gay. I'm just celibate.
I mean, that sounds gay. I just want you to know that this is, like, the first conversation of, like, three conversations that leads to you being gay. Like, there's this, and then in a year, it's like, oh, you know, I'm kind of gonna want to get back out there, but I think I like guys. And then there's the big, oh, I'm a gay guy.
You're gay for saying that.
It's Wednesday, August 27th, 2014, and this is Eric and Ted's Ice Cream Social.
I'm Eric.
And I am Ted.
And as the collective ESPN erection for Johnny Manziel seems to have subsided for now, so you know he's a backup, they turn their efforts to a more important preseason story, and that's how Michael Sam's total lack of heterosexual desire is fitting in at Rams camp, going so far as to discuss his post-game showering habits.
And it seems like everyone but ESPN is over it. As his Rams teammate Chris Long tweeted, "Dear ESPN, everyone is over this but you." And really, who cares? But that I'm not going to soapbox on this.
No, by all means, go ahead. Hop on that soapbox. Let's hear it.
No, forget it, because there's too much. Because do I start talking about how ESPN is just TMZ for people who keep statistics? Or do we talk about the amount of flat-out insanity in the world, like from the Middle East to Middle America? Should we take more time for those to lead the news rather than maybe who likes boys? Or better yet, how about we honor the separation of church and state? And can everyone please stop talking about how America's a Christian nation when it was never thought of that way before the so-called Reagan Revolution?
Easy, buddy.
What?
That soapbox, you can hop right off.
All right. Fine. Bottom line, nobody would even care about this ESPN if you didn't say a damn thing. So in a phrase, ESPN, hit the showers and wear swim trunks if you're uncomfortable about it.
There you have it. Right out of Ted's mouth into your ear hole. And, in other news, 82 NFL players were asked what team they would least like to play for.
Yes.
And not surprisingly, the Oakland Raiders topped that list.
Of course they did.
Current owner Mark Davis was unavailable for comment as he was at a casting call for a Prince Valiant film adaptation.
Well, actually, you know what? I thought he was in the middle of suing Dutch Boy for using his likeness on paint cans.
You know what? That could be the case. Now, we're making that stuff up, but not the story. Quick to defend the Raiders were...
Former Raiders.
You guessed it. So Charles Woodson, among others, were there to defend the honor of these douchebags. Really, Oakland, get your act together, because the NFL is better when you're better. The NFL needs you to be good and not a laughingstock. Please.
That's right. And, you know, as Eric and I go down our list of topics for this week, I can't help but finally feel good for the Seattle Seahawks and the San Francisco 49ers. As Rams quarterback Sam Bradford is out for the season with a torn ACL, finally paving the way for Seattle and San Francisco to maybe win the West.
Maybe.
Yeah, I know that's a pretty meaningless story overall, save for one thing that happened in the wake of this Bradford injury. Eric, do you care to take this one?
Okay, sure. Now, former Jets franchise quarterback.
Can't help it.
Mark Sanchez stated that he would rather ride and rot on that bench in Philly than play in St. Louis. God. Of course, he's forgetting two very important things. The last time the Rams found themselves in this position, the greatest show on turf was born.
Mm-hmm.
And two, there's no all-pro spot for the position called left out.
Mm-hmm.
Mark, we hope one day you are stuck between playing against Michael Sam
mm-hmm.
or showering with him. Because either way, you're probably
You'll agree, the ramming is fun when you're ramming with me.
Ram it. This is the 1986 Los Angeles Rams with Ram It.
That was a great year.
It was. Eric Dickerson, baby. Let's ram it. Oh, with a sax solo, no less.
A sax solo? Yeah. Really, Ted? A sax solo?
Yeah. Quality. So, Eric, where do you want to start today?
All right. Well, let's continue on just for a couple of minutes on this, the new infatuation here with Michael Sam.
Okay.
Okay. Now, as you so eloquently stated, this would not be an issue if you weren't talking about it. So
honest
ESPN,
God, who cares?
Just stop. So now that they've realized they can't talk about Manziel, because he's now a clipboard holder.
He is.
So they can no longer talk about him at all until Brian Hoyer starts to, you know, crumble, fail, or get injured. Then they can talk about him again. So now, training camp's been going how long?
Now we're on 5-6 weeks now.
Okay, 5-6 weeks of training camp. It's quite a bit of time since he's been drafted.
Mm-hmm. Drafted in April.
So I'd say within the second day of training camp, all this stuff that they're making an issue and a story of with how's he adjusting, how are you guys adjusting, that all got settled on day two of training camp inside this team.
Well, Chris Long, the guy who actually tweeted back out to ESPN, nobody cares about this, plays the same position, this defensive end.
Yep.
One of the things that Jeff Fisher was real clear about here this week was Michael Sam is not a special teams player and he's not a linebacker.
Right. He's gonna,
he's a defensive end. His counterpart, a guy he's actually technically competing with at this point, has no issue with this.
No.
This is the position head of the Rams.
Yep.
No problem with this whatsoever. Everybody's fine. Everything seems...
Nobody's had a problem with it.
And the only people that have had a problem with it...
It's ESPN. And all the media.
The people playing against Michael Sam. Because he's kicking the ass out of everybody he plays against.
I wouldn't go so far as to say he's kicking their ass. However, he's been doing quite well for himself. And everybody saw the nice sack of Manziel.
He's got two and a half
that
sacks.
That was nice. You know, everybody wanted to see that, and that was good. And he bailed out a
By the way, did you check out the that guy on Twitter, what Eric just mentioned?
Yeah, he was going to buy everybody beers for the rest of their lives if Michael Sam sacks Manziel and does his money sign. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. So Michael Sam got his back, and
the kid ended up saying, the kid ended up saying, geez, like, I can't get everybody drunk in perpetuity, so somebody
well
let me off
kids.
The hook.
Yeah, and then Michael Sam came to the rescue.
Yeah, it was the Boys and Girls Clubs of St. Louis.
Yep.
So,
that was good. That was a class act. And but really, it's a non-issue. We know anybody that has any common sense and anybody in that locker room knows it's a non-issue. But they have nothing else to talk about. So they are now going to bring this up 5-6 weeks later just to drum up a story, which I think is repugnant.
Now, you were talking about the young reporter that actually, I don't even want to say broke this story, that
broke the
fabricated.
Story. Yeah. That possibly fabricated the story. Her quotes, she quoted players. Now, you know, in most practices and things like that, the media is regulated to when and where they can ask questions.
Of course, yeah.
Now, apparently this was not even on team time. This reporter was seeking out these players on their own time and getting quotes. And the other two or three quotes that she put in there aren't important because obviously that's not what we're talking about. But whatever was said, it's all positive stuff. It was quoted with the person who said it. But the most controversial statement was about how the quote was, and I'm paraphrasing, but it's pretty damn close to, he knows when it is and is not okay to shower.
See, one
so
the...
he waits or something.
Okay.
But she put notes. She put anonymous.
Okay.
And that's very suspect to me. That's very suspect. You got citations for all the quotes for this piece you did, but the one that everybody's talking about and what you knew, I'm sure, that you knew would cause commotion, it's anonymous. Jeff Fisher believes that this is a fabricated story.
Okay, so one of the things, though, when you and I were having a brief discussion about this earlier, you seemed to want to let ESPN off the hook a little bit on this.
Yeah, for the most part. I don't think any production manager had anything to do with either that line of questioning or that topic.
See, my thing with that is any place that fosters an environment where a reporter thinks that they have to come up with a sensationalized BS story like this is not okay.
Yeah, I think she had nothing else to grab onto.
When I was soapboxing, I'm not kidding. The ESPN is sort of becoming a TMZ for stat heads.
Yeah, no, okay? I couldn't agree
with
you more.
It's becoming ridiculous.
It is.
Now, dovetailed right into that is with TMZ. TMZ releases this thing about Ray Rice. They show the Ray Rice beating in the
At least they show the video.
They show the video, right?
At least they show video to back up what they're saying.
Right. So as we're talking about this right now, we have this woman is in an environment who breaks this story, who is in a working environment, who feels as though she has to come up with this story to stay on the air, to talk about something.
To further her career, to get her name out there.
This is a team that just lost their starting quarterback.
That's what I'm saying. I feel that she is so inept at her job that instead of actually going with what the real stories are, one, you know what a real story is? about how it's not a story that Michael Sam is the first openly gay NFL player. Hopefully he makes the team, and that'll solidify that. But how all the positive that's coming out of this and how nobody has a problem with this. You want to touch on that, fine. But you just lost your starting quarterback to a torn ACL. You can't talk about that. You're going to talk about this? You're going to search out these players to try to what?
Some sensationalized BS.
Yes, thank you.
All right, so but this is...
A little soundbite.
And it blew up in her face.
Oh, yeah, no, she'll be suspended.
ESPN Today was forced to apologize for this, and they're...
I don't even think they were forced. I think they ran to the phone to apologize.
No, they apologized on the air. And their apology was, if forgive the word, it was a little bit flaccid. The anchors on SportsCenter, between commercial bumpers...
Stories or whatever, yeah.
...came on and said, we ran a story yesterday about Michael Sam and didn't allude to the story at all and said...
Yeah, why promote it?
Well, yeah. What they had said was, paraphrasing here, it goes against our position and sensitivity toward the LGBT community.
Doesn't sound like too much of an apology.
It goes against our position in our sensitivity toward the LGBT community. And we apologize. Period. That was it. It was a 10-second apology.
It's almost a backhanded apology. Sorry we weren't sensitive enough to you. That's what that apology says to me. Sorry we weren't sensitive enough to you. How about... Sorry for lack of common sense and how it's insulting. How about that? How about not sensitive? How about not being insulted?
It's such a bizarre thing to have to deal with in 2014.
Does a team reporter that's covering the WNBA playoffs, and yes, that exists, that's happening.
Oh my God!
Does a reporter go up to a teammate of Brittany Griner and say, "So how does it work with the showers? How do y'all shower with Brittany Griner?" That would be absurd. Are you kidding? Never happened. Never happen. And it shouldn't. But why doesn't that apply to Michael Sam and the Rams?
Well, you know what? Because the stereotypical attitude toward female athletes. If you are a proficient female athlete, there has constantly been an air that this person must be a lesbian. The classic lesbian gym teacher BS.
Yep.
Okay?
I think we've gotten away with that over the years. But yeah, no, I understand exactly
what
you're
saying. We've gotten away from it,
yes.
But we've also gotten away with it. Okay, as a society.
All right, yep.
Okay, at the same time, a homosexual male
in a heterosexual "quote unquote" sport,
a sport, okay,
macho sport,
yeah, could never be deemed physically capable of being a Michael Sam, a world beater,
an All American,
SEC co-defensive player of the year for Missouri. This guy goes out there and dominates at his position throughout college, gets drafted, unfortunately, in the 7th round. He was probably 3rd or 4th round talent, but his baggage ends up bringing
him
down.
Well, he didn't have a good combine either, but sure, yeah.
No, but you know what? A lot of guys don't have good combines.
And it suffers. And, you know, I think he was a 3rd round talent that would have been a 4th or 5th round talent because of his baggage, but ended up being a 6th, 7th because of his baggage and his performance at the combine. But again, it's...
and we can speculate on all of that stuff until we're blue in the face. But the bottom line is that because there's a classic, you know, vision of this gay guy has to be basically Robin Williams' character from The Birdcage versus Michael Sam, who is a dominant physical presence on the defensive side of a football team. And who honestly cares what he wants to do in his spare time?
Nobody cares. The fact that we're even talking about it is kind of sad because nobody cares. So we're actually preaching to the people that don't give a shit.
You know, it's funny because I honestly think that when push comes to shove and nobody knows anything about anybody else's sexuality, you have a much easier time going about your day-to-day operation.
Sure.
When you come into everything with this preconceived notion on what somebody should be, of course, that's when you have these problems.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Sam being the first openly gay athlete.
Yeah.
Well, there's a tight end in the Washington Redskins Ring of Honor named Jerry Smith, who was not openly gay, finishes out his career. He's a multiple Pro Bowler and ends up in the equivalent of the Washington Redskins Hall of Fame, if you will. Yeah. He's in their Ring of Honor. Nobody knows the guy's gay. He leaves the game and comes out. Change anybody's opinion of him?
1 in 10 people are gay, so how many people have played football over the years? And that'll tell you.
There's 1,200 players in the NFL today. 120 of them are gay. One's out of the closet. Deal with it. But Eric, I know that you had a couple of other things that you wanted to talk about related directly to the Rams.
Well, the thing is you got, so you got Michael Sam.
Yep.
You know, amongst all the stupid attention that he's getting, negative attention, the way I see it. But you got a player who's fighting his ass off and working his ass off to make this team and to be in the NFL and to play for the St. Louis Rams.
Yep.
And on the flip side of that freaking coin, you got this bum over in Philadelphia who's riding the bench, accomplishing nothing, and has been nothing but a bust and been laughed at in New York. And he's openly saying that, nah, I'd rather ride the bench than go play in St. Louis.
You're obviously talking about one Mark Sanchez.
Yes, Mark Sanchez. So you got one guy giving his all, competing, trying to get a starting job on this Rams team, and you got another guy 1,500 miles away, 2,000 miles away, who's nobody asked him, by the way, and he just goes out of his way to make sure that everybody knows that he'd rather ride the bench than go play with him and go compete.
You know, I'm not. It's funny. I'm not actually surprised about Mark Sanchez doing that.
No, he's gut. He's gutless. He's got no drive. He's got no competitive spirit. It's clear. That's why he's a backup player on Philly.
He had been put back into a preseason game against the Giants by his head coach.
Yep.
And gotten his shoulder blown out.
Yep.
How much respect do you think the organization had for a guy that they drafted in the first round to put him in the fourth quarter of a preseason game against the against the New York Giants?
Yep.
And let him basically get hurt.
Yep. That's exactly what happened.
That's yeah.
exactly what
so
happened.
So that right there tells you virtually everything you need to know about Mark Sanchez.
Yep.
And this goes again, right hand in glove with my entire theory about guys that, about quarterbacks that play at the top tier of college football, USC. He came right on the heels of Matt Leinart.
Leinart, yep.
Okay, Matt Leinart was, again, another bust. But Matt Leinart was a Heisman-quality quarterback.
Yeah, stuck around for 7 years.
When you have guys who are able to play on teams where they can go and get ostensibly pro-caliber talent, Reggie Bush, you can get, you have guys who play at Florida State, you have guys that play at Alabama. These are not the guys that succeed in the NFL. The guys that succeed in the NFL went to Stanford. They're not world beaters. Andrew Luck coming out of Jim Harbaugh's Stanford program.
Yep.
He obviously, Andrew Luck is going to get recruited by everybody. He chose Stanford. When Mark Sanchez was playing in, you know, a national championship caliber program, they're going to get everything that they can out of him. That was it. He was a good college quarterback.
Yep.
What's he going to do in the pros?
Well, nothing now. Clearly. Nothing now. Clearly, he's going to be the perennial clipboard holder and bench player.
You know what?
Good for him. Congratulations. You know, you've achieved your dreams, Mark Sanchez.
Mark Sanchez has gotten the perfect life now.
Yep. Good for you.
He gets to make about $800,000 a year. He doesn't have to get his uniform
dirty.
No
culpability.
Yep. He has no culpability.
Yep.
He has no responsibility to his teammates. He has to pretend twice a year to be Tony Romo, twice a year to be Kirk Cousins or RG3, and twice a year to be Eli Manning, and that's what he has to do.
Congratulations, Mark Sanchez. You made it.
And you've also made it to the top of our list of the number one douchebags in the entire NFL, and that goes against Terrell Suggs, Ray Rice, and everybody else that puts on the purple and black in Baltimore.
Hear, hear.
Eric and I will be back in just a couple of minutes, and we want to talk about Josh Gordon, suspension upheld, Logan Mankins playing for the Bucks, and a whole host of other things. Stick around for a couple more minutes.
You're getting air from there, man. It's no good. You see this? It's gotta be tight. You're gonna have to put some gum around the base of that to get a good hit, man.
Come along and take a hit from the ball. Put the blunt down just for a second. Don't get me wrong, it's not a new method. Inhale, exhale.
Just got Josh Gordon in the mail. Welcome back to Eric and Ted's Ice Cream Social.
I'm Eric.
And I'm still Ted. And Josh Gordon.
Suspension upheld. Yep. I'm a little disappointed.
Time to pay the piper, as yep. this case may be.
NFL's leading receiver last year, even though he only played 14 of the 16 games,
yep.
has been suspended for the entirety of the NFL season and preseason of next year.
Yeah, training camp, OTAs, preseason, yep. all the way through, because it's retroactive back to the day that the decision comes down, which officially makes it today.
Yep.
So he can't even come back until yep. week one.
Now, there's
one.
Been precedent set of you know, letting a guy off the hook early to do OTAs and training camp. And
No, not in this case.
No, there is. There's precedent set in year-long suspensions. So we won't know that until next year. But for the time being, he is definitely done for this entire season and into the next.
Now, right off the top, tell me, what are your initial reactions? What's your initial thought on this?
Well, I'm surprised. I got to say I'm surprised. With everything that's been going on with the NFL and suspensions and the imbalance of the amount of time people have been suspended for certain infractions, I figured that there'd be a little bit of wiggle room, not to mention the fact that whatever 40-some-odd tests that he passed and plus the B 70, sample, 70-something, 70 right, that he had passed plus his B sample was clean. So therefore, that was part of the same sample that tested positive tested clean. So I figure in my book, that warrants at least a half of that suspension.
Here's the
thing. But they go ahead and go along with it. They said that that was actually never on the table. It was either going to be all or nothing. So they were either going to overturn the year suspension or it was getting a year suspension. There was going to be no in between.
Well, from what I understand, this is part of the CBA. This is in black and white, right in the collective bargaining agreement. And whether yep. you agree with it or not,
yep.
a multiple drug violation is a one-year suspension.
Yep.
And again, I say agree with it or not, because I don't particularly agree with it. And
well, of course not. We've been talking about it for weeks.
Yeah.
The imbalance of suspensions.
Now, everybody's going to bring up Ray Rice. Everybody's going to bring up the domestic violence stuff.
Well, that was an isolated incident, Ted. He only knocked out his fiance once. Gordon smoked pot twice.
Well, you know, by the way, just briefly, I got to play the new Madden game, Madden 15, and I thought it was supposed to be the most realistic game. I haven't been able to shoot one of my friends for talking to the wrong people. I haven't been able to knock out my wife in an elevator.
You haven't been able to hop in the car with your buddy, your fellow running back, and go cruising around smoking J's and getting arrested? You weren't able to do that?
You must be talking about newly acquired Pittsburgh Steelers LeGarrette Blount.
Yeah, and was it LaBelle?
Patty LaBelle. Yeah, no, not Patty. I don't think anybody's hanging out with Patty right now. I believe the quote was,
what did he say
to me? I smoked 2 hours ago. Yeah,
I didn't know you couldn't drive high?
Yeah, like, I didn't know you could drive high.
You couldn't drive high.
Yeah, so
I didn't know if it was illegal to smoke pot and drive around.
Yeah, so he
said my 14-year-old self. I mean, really?
My God.
Really, dude?
I didn't admit to a thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, the bottom line here, and as Eric is so keenly pointing out, marijuana infractions will continue to happen all throughout.
Until they get rid of it.
You know, I think
the recreational drug clause, then this will continue to happen.
No, and I don't even think it needs to be a recreational drug clause. I think that what they need to do is they need to just take marijuana off their list, very quietly, off their list of prohibited substances. That's it.
Why just marijuana?
Because
what do you care if a guy snorts a line of coke? It's not performance enhancing.
Cocaine, if a guy's in the locker room doing cocaine?
It's not performance enhancing.
You don't honestly think that Lawrence Taylor got a bump from being on coke?
As much as you can do from anything else, I don't think it enhances his performance.
No,
it might get him jived up.
No, but I also know
lots of people that can't even move on it. So, no, it's not a performance enhancer.
I don't know anybody.
Cocaine
who touches
it. Yeah, me neither. I was just using
it
as an example. Yes,
hyperbole.
Come on, Ted, play the game.
Yeah, no, I don't think that. I don't think that should be the case at all.
It's not a performance enhancer. It shouldn't be. Shouldn't be a banned substance.
Regardless of your stance on that, I think that the one drug that needs to come off of the list is marijuana. You can do it very quietly. You just take it off the list of those banned substances, and you don't test for it anymore. Nobody's any the wiser in the public consciousness. You don't have to defend it anymore. Someone doesn't know that.
I think all recreational drugs shouldn't be on the tested list anymore.
No, you know what? Cocaine's not legal anywhere. It's not legal anywhere. If you have to obtain illicit drugs through the black market exclusively...
Which is what they do because they're in Pittsburgh, so that's what they did with marijuana.
It's what if he's on a road trip in Denver? It doesn't... I'm not...
But he wasn't.
Listen, I'm not going to get into a debate on where pot's legal and where it's not. And I don't know. You're not legalizing coke.
You can't separate them. Recreational drugs. You can't separate them.
Yes, you can.
Federal government still says it's illegal, Ted.
State and local governments say it's not.
They're not in that state and local government.
And marijuana, how many people, do people die from cocaine overdoses?
Sure.
Do people die from marijuana overdoses?
What's that?
Okay, exactly.
Well, what does the NFL care about them dying? All of a sudden they care? Because you're going down the wrong road here.
Really? So wait, so you're going to get... Now, your
now the
argument,
NFL cares about the health of the players with the drugs?
No, clearly.
No, they're not.
Really?
So they suspend because of marijuana because of health issues?
They suspend marijuana because it's on the banned substance list, and they do everything by the book because they're run by and governed by lawyers and businessmen. That's not the point. It's not about the health. It's
right.
Okay, and I'm fine with that. But you can't have a guy smoking a joint is not the same as a guy whacking an eight ball at 4:30 in the morning the day before a game. It's not the same, and don't bring it into the same realm. On the to that point, Matt Prater?
Yeah, the kicker for Denver.
Yeah, he's now suspended for the first four games of the season because he drank, allegedly, a couple of beers at home while he wasn't supposed to have any alcohol. Okay? This is
why wasn't he supposed to have alcohol?
Because he had already had a substance abuse counseling through the NFL.
So the NFL regulated that he could no longer drink?
You cannot drink once you've gone through this program. And you have to have there's a specific period of time where you're on a probation period. You cannot imbibe any alcohol at all. Matt Prater was at home, had a couple of beers. This is what the story goes, had a couple of beers, and he got a call to, boom, you have to take your drug test now. That's how they work. Yeah, I know you know that from the Josh Gordon story.
Yeah.
He immediately took his drug test on the spot. Alcohol was in his system. Four-game suspension. That's the exact story that's out there right now.
How absurd is that? How absurd is that?
Yes. The answer is it's remarkably absurd. But the NFL is simply taking what they've written into the collective bargaining agreement with the Players Association.
My question is this, then. How did the players possibly agree to this?
Oh, see, now you're
getting
into...
That's the flip side of that, right?
No,
they agreed to this. Why didn't they make their stand then?
They went on strike, and they picked their battles.
And that was a battle they chose not to fight.
That was a battle they chose not to fight, and it is a battle that players are currently, I guess, more or less losing.
Sounds like it.
Well, but not a lot of guys are losing it, okay? Josh Gordon lost it. Matt Prater lost it.
But what I see is every time this comes up and someone gets in trouble for smoking pot or what have you, it seems like it's such a matter-of-fact situation that's going on that you gotta wonder how many aren't getting caught. I mean, these two guys from Pittsburgh hopped in the car, smoked some blunts, drove around and got high. Thought nothing of it.
Allegedly 2 hours early.
Yeah, but thought nothing of it. Okay, they're on this team. They do it. You know, they're in training camp.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting ready for the season.
Yep.
They thought nothing of going out and going for a bone ride.
Okay.
So they obviously had no ideas that they were going to get in trouble for it. So I got to imagine that that's the general consensus among players, is that whatever they've worked out, they feel they can get around it. Until, of course, the one out of however many gets surprised and they're like, oh, I didn't take my daily cleanser. Or I didn't, oh, damn, I drank those beers and now all of a sudden they call me randomly. It just seems like nobody's worried about it, so therefore, when one stumbles, this is when it hits the news.
Well, one of the things that that keeps coming up is I think that players only get tested if they have no infractions. I think they only get tested once or twice a year randomly. And you're probably not going to necessarily get tested during training camp because the likelihood that team physicians are going to give you a painkillers, that kind of thing, the likelihood's probably going to go up. You also might be taking certain supplements and things like that during training camp where your diet's going to change, that it might show up some false positives. Maybe
well, they don't even care about false positives. Apparently, a positive is a positive.
Well, yeah, sure.
Even
okay,
false positives.
And, well, there was another guy who'd been taking, and if his name slips my mind right now, but there's a guy who's taking Adderall from the time.
That was what I was referring to, and his name escapes me as well.
But he was taking Adderall from the time he was 9 years old, yep. And he just happened to not report it with the NFL. Shame on him. One of the things about this LaBelle and Blunt thing, you keep saying, you just recounted the story of them going on a high ride. As if they were smart enough to realize the difference.
They both went to college.
Hey, oh shit! Back up. Yeah, you better.
What? I'm
about
just saying.
That.
I'm just.
Dexter Manley couldn't read. Okay, so forget about the college argument. But the bottom line is that these guys. Nobody's ever accused these guys of being geniuses. They went on a high ride. It was stupid. They got pinched. They aren't being accused of being smart. They're being accused of being high while they were driving.
It's Bell.
What?
It's LaVon Bell.
Sorry.
We call him LaBelle.
Hey, LaBelle.
LaVon Bell. LaBelle.
Yeah,
we've just created. Yes, absolutely.
Yes, we've made a hybrid of your name, LaVon Bell. And
congratulations.
Hey, at least somebody's talking about you. Right? But now, are they? Is it going to be a double fine or double penalty from the NFL?
Because you got to imagine two games each at least for. Because they're going to test positive for marijuana, so that's a 2-game suspension.
They're also got the DUI on,
right? They have that's exactly. They got arrested, and that's driving while under the influence.
Okay,
so I don't see how they could escape with anything less than a 4-game suspension each.
And
right,
if this is their first infraction. Then fine, they get the 4 games,
yeah, 2-2, right?
Okay, what's the penalty again for 2 infractions?
Well, I don't think they have in a circumstance of 2 infractions at the same time.
Okay,
they talk about 2 infractions. One and then another. These were happening at the same time, so I don't know how that would go in the punishment scale.
Now, Prater, who had a DUI, got put into the substance abuse program,
mm-hmm.
sits at home, drinks a couple of beers.
Then gets 4.
Bingo, gets yep. 4. So
I think they're going to do 2-2.
Now, Prater's could get reduced to 2. That's in an appeal. His lawyer's trying to lobby for it right now. But, again, The NFL Players Association, during the last collective bargaining agreement, you remember the strike and the teams before games with the solidarity and all of this other stuff is a couple of years ago. These players picked their battles. This was not a battle they picked.
Yep. So now they have to live with it.
On the whole, they seem to be, I guess, winning this battle. Because with 1,200 players and, a couple of dozen getting suspended. And still, my favorite statistic is, 9 players in 7 years on Seattle? And speaking of Seattle, what do you think of Pete Carroll's $300,000 fine this week and limited OTAs next year? The story goes, a couple of years ago, Pete Carroll allowed hitting in the OTAs, which are the voluntary workouts, I guess, before the season begins.
Yep.
Well, he was warned not to allow that to happen, and this year... allowed hitting again. The NFL stepped in.
Belichick did something like that. Didn't he get in trouble a couple of years back for the same thing?
I can't recall.
I'm pretty sure they did. Yep.
Well, the NFL stepped in and fined the Seahawks and Pete Carroll a combined...
Personally.
A combined $300,000 and removed 2 of their off-season practices from their schedule, which seems like a remarkably harsh crime, or a harsh penalty.
Does, doesn't it?
Yeah, considering that for the alleged spying whatever incident, Belichick got fined $250,000.
Just himself. Yeah.
But he did lose $500,000, whatever.
$500,000 to Kraft.
Yeah, and that seems like, for allowing hitting, seems like a pretty harsh penalty. That came up this week, too, and I'm not a big Pete Carroll guy. Not a big Seahawks guy. But I certainly don't think that punishment fits the crime?
No, of course not.
Part of the collective bargaining agreement again.
Yep.
So the NFL has been very, very, very clear on one thing.
I mean, they're stuck with this until, I think it's 2020.
Yeah.
It was an 8-year agreement in 11-12. So, about 2020. That's when that'll expire and they can renegotiate, imagine.
But again, the NFL, I don't see Roger Goodell's a young guy. I don't see him going anywhere.
No. No. Now, you have to be run out of town, and the owners love him too much for that.
Troy Vincent is now a part of the disciplinary commission for big hits, and Troy Vincent was a criminal on the field.
So he would know.
So they have all of these, you know, they take the CBA and they read it to the letter. And that is how the interpretation on these things goes. What was not in the CBA? Anything based on domestic violence.
Yep.
We discussed this
on
our Ray Rice, you know, lead with the left extravaganza. And going past that and all the suspensions and all that craziness, another massive story broke here in New England this week. And Bill Belichick, in his infinite wisdom, and all hail Belichick,
traded... All hail Belichick.
All... I have a Futurama hypnotoad somewhere in here. All hail the hypnotoad. Bill Belichick traded Logan Mankins.
Yep.
9-year starter.
Yep.
To the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for tight end.
Was it Tim Wright. Yep. Tim Wright and a 4th-round pick for next year.
And that was actually decided a little bit later after the trade ended up going through. Tim Wright, if you don't know, was a Greg Schiano-coached Rutgers wide receiver who, when he got to the NFL, was switched over to the tight end spot. So he is not a blocking tight end. And by the way, even though Gronkowski is a remarkably good, albeit fragile, receiver, is a dominant blocker. So he was the guy in the Hernandez-Gronkowski tandem. Gronkowski was the guy who could block. Did they take this tight end to replace Aaron Hernandez, or did they get it as insurance for a fragile Gronkowski?
No, they got it. They got it as an additional weapon. This is not showing a sign of concern for Gronk's health. This is not a just-in-case Gronk gets injured. This is an addition to. This is going to be a significant part of the attack of their offense. Now, the kid's no slouch.
Okay.
The kid's no slouch. His rookie year, he had 54 receptions.
That was last year.
Yep, 571 yards. Undrafted. And five TDs. Undrafted. Comparable to Aaron Hernandez's rookie numbers was Aaron Hernandez was 59 receptions, so it was just a small discrepancy there. And Tim Wright has 8 more yards, so he's at 563 Aaron Hernandez had, and Hernandez had 1 more touchdown than this guy. So, comparably speaking, their numbers are identical for their rookie seasons. One was an undrafted, one was not. Mm-hmm. One had Tom Brady throwing to him. One did not. Gleason throwing to him. So just eyeballing those stats alone says to me that this guy's going to be a valuable and viable weapon for Tom Brady. And that's when they're going to be able to get back to those two tight end sets. And, you know, one of them's going to get open. You saw Aaron Hernandez really start to almost look like he was going to pass Gronk. Because when teams started focusing on Gronk, Aaron Hernandez took that opportunity to really run with it and showcase his talents.
Oh, one of the things,
and I think this is going to happen as well with Tim.
A couple of things real quick. First of all, there was a little bit more versatility when it came to Aaron Hernandez, being able to move him to the outside.
He's a big dude. I mean, this guy's no slouch at 6'4", 220.
No, and again, he played wide receiver in college. But I'm hesitant to compare a first-round talent in Aaron Hernandez to an undrafted guy out of Rutgers. So regardless of where he stood in his rookie season, I have a lot of difficulty comparing the Florida Gators, again, first-round talent, tight end, Aaron Hernandez, to this kid.
Right, you think Aaron Hernandez would get the edge.
Yeah, there was also a lot more available to Tom Brady than there was to Gleason, Aaron Hernandez. You just even named Gronkowski standing next to him. So how many options did Gleason have for real? Did he have?
I'm sure his wide receivers were probably better than Brady's. I'll tell you that.
Well, go look
I
up
mean,
the...
Almost,
go,
it wouldn't even be was, tough was to there, any team to have a better wide receiving core than Brady's.
Really? So they had a guy who was on par. The Tampa Bay team last year had a guy on par with Wes Welker. They had a guy on par with Wes Welker, with Rob Gronkowski.
I don't see him as a wideout.
No.
I don't see him as Gronkowski as a wide receiver either.
I'm talking about
guys. I said wide receiver.
Okay,
let's be clear. I said wide receiver.
Okay, I'm talking about people who can legitimately catch the football.
Yeah.
Okay? In Aaron Hernandez's rookie year,
yeah.
Tom Brady had Aaron Hernandez, Rob Gronkowski, Wes Welker.
Mm-hmm.
Who else was on that team? Just those three guys alone, Brady has a ton of talent. Who was on Tampa Bay last year? Of any measure at all? Did they have any 1,000-yard receivers? Did they have any? So while you're checking that out, I want to switch back for a second to the Logan Mankins part of this. Bill Belichick has a history of pulling the trigger on guys a year before their due date comes up. Logan Mankins, 32 years old, 9-year starter out of Utah. His other job is he breaks wild Mustangs. So the guy's as tough as nails. He's the one guy that's consistently voted in the NFL, the last guy you want to have a fist fight with. Tom Brady can't be thrilled about this. But in the same way that the New England Patriots couldn't have been thrilled when 2004 rolled around or 2003 rolled around and Lawyer Malloy was jettisoned the day before the season began, goes to Buffalo, and the Patriots get blown out 31-0. And then come back and end up winning the Super Bowl. I'm certainly not saying that that's going to be the case now that Logan Mankins is gone. And I'm sure that this team isn't happy about the fact that Logan Mankins is gone. But they also acknowledge that it's a business. I think the Patriots made a mistake when they got rid of Deion Branch. They could have used Deion Branch the year that he left. They could have used Wes Welker the year that he left. They could have used Richard Seymour the year that he left. Granted, they ended up getting Deion Branch back. Wes Welker did a dynamite job in his first year with Denver, and unfortunately, the young child, fragile eggshell mind, is a little bit shattered right now, and he's probably going to end up rethinking his career at this point. I'm not entirely confident that this might have been the best move going into this season, although I think it was more of a business decision rather than a player decision. Last year, in the AFC Championship game, the Denver Broncos blew up Tom Brady right up the dead middle of the field. You can go back and sit there and watch that game for a half an hour, and they absolutely dominated in the dead center of the field. They ran right up the middle, right at Logan Mankins. And I think that that might have been the actual moment that Bill Belichick said, that's an expendable guy. He played an entire season with a blown-out ACL. Nobody questions his toughness. Nobody questions his ability.
Definitely not.
I just don't think he's a $10 million guy anymore. He's $8 million in dead money on the Patriots cap. He's $4 million this year, I guess, and $4 million next year. Does this pave the way for a long-term deal for Darrelle Revis that we've talked about before?
Could be. You know, it's always a numbers game with them.
It is. Yep. And do they want... And now, next year, going into next year, the guys under contract for next year that are over 30... are down to now Tom Brady, Vince Wilfork, and Darrelle Revis, I think. There's not a glut of 30-year-plus guys. So they're going to be one of the youngest teams in the NFL. That's where Bill Belichick wants to be.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find anything on Tampa Bay's wide receivers?
You mean like, you know, the top five wide receiver in the league? You know, they didn't have anybody like that.
What, last year?
Yeah.
Who did they have? Talk to
me. Vincent Jackson.
Okay, they had Vincent Jackson.
So better than any wide receiver that the Patriots had.
Okay, they had a guy. All right, good. No, I'm just saying. I'm asking.
All right, well, I'm just saying. I mean, like you kind of threw out all the stat. You threw them out away, saying they don't mean nothing because of all the other options he had. But what I'm showing is, and it was Glennon. I kept saying Gleason.
I got you.
Mike Glennon was, you know, rookie. Yeah.
I understand.
We're probably never going to have to mutter his name again. But with those stats, I mean, they're humble stats. Aaron Hernandez only had 500 yards. You know what I mean? They're not standout stats. But what I'm saying, like, I mean, if you look, and this is actually a microcosm of how Tampa Bay works, is that once I found Vincent Jackson on there, and I'm like, how could I forget him? I start looking for the second wide receiver, right?
Mm-hmm.
Second wide receiver had, like, 200 yards. It's retarded. So they didn't have, like, anybody.
Okay.
So they didn't do anything. You know, other than obviously Vincent Jackson, you know, being the talent that he is. So for even this kid to be able to get 500 yards when nobody else is getting crap because the team was crap, you know, I'd say that's pretty good. And, I mean, again, and plus when I factor in the fact that he's going to be under Bill Belichick, working with Tom Brady, working with Gronkowski, I see a big upside with this guy. Revis had good things to say about the guy as well. You know, for his time, said smart kid, he works hard, good athlete. I'm just from looking at it, eyeballing it, the smell test, I think he's going to be good for the Patriots. But I definitely believe it's not a safety net. I think this is in addition to Gronkowski.
Now, one last thing. Aaron Hernandez did only play in 14 games in 2010. Okay. So he played in two less games. So I'm not, and I don't want to, that's why I'm hesitant to go.
And I don't even know how many games this kid played.
It's fine, but this is why I'm not saying apples for apples on this kid. So when, and Tampa Bay has
they had a lot of tight ends. I'm trying to find, I can't even find them amongst all the tight ends they had.
Tampa's not the best litmus test to talk about a receiver. Now,
no, it's not a test for anything.
That
franchise is not a
it's
he played nothing. In all 16 games. He did.
Okay,
play
so
in
he
all
played in 16 games, and Aaron Hernandez played in 14 in his rookie year.
Yep.
So, and his yards per game of 40 yards, and his longest was a 46. So, again, it's not necessarily negative toward this guy. I wouldn't put all my eggs in this guy's basket.
Well,
talking about,
you know, getting rid of, as we had pointed out, as you had pointed out, you know, a guy that is obviously on the decline of his skills in Logan Mankins. Somebody who's going to have a big cap number hit. A guy that we probably weren't going to be able to have next year.
Mm-hmm.
So to take that situation, get out of that.
And put lipstick on a pig.
And get this tight end who, even if he can put up 500 yards in the season, it would be a tremendous lift to the Patriots. And, by the way, you know how Belichick loves his middle-round draft picks that he likes to stock back up.
Sure.
So, I mean, you know, again, Belichick wins again.
For me, I think the jury is still out on this.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see how it unfolds during the regular season. But I expect you'll be hearing this kid's name a lot.
Okay, the way that this thing works for me, forgetting about Logan Mankins and his success or failure in Tampa, I think that Tampa will be it'll be a welcome addition to Tampa Bay. And Lovie Smith is the head coach.
Just fade into it, and I think Lovie Smith is one of the most overrated coaches in the league.
Oh, Lovie Smith has already talked about along the way, and years back, Lovie Smith had singled out Logan Mankins as the perfect player in the NFL.
Bill Belichick said he was the greatest lineman that he's ever coached. Couple weeks before he traded him.
This guy, well, and in his parting message
to him. Shows
how much
respect, shows how much respect he has for the guy.
He coached Jimbo Elliott.
Yep.
Okay, like this is no joke.
Jimbo.
No, well, Jumbo. This guy's coached Jimbo Elliott. This is a Hall of Fame. Like, this guy's coached Hall of Fame offensive linemen.
Yep.
And he has Logan Mankins as the best offensive lineman he's
nothing
ever coached.
Nothing but high esteem for him.
Yeah. This was a purely business-based decision.
Numbers and what they were getting in return.
This works out great for the Patriots if, one, Gronkowski stays healthy and this guy's able to fill that second
to give
tight
anything.
End role.
Yeah, yeah.
Two, they're able to take that money and parlay it into a longer term deal for a better for a Revis
or a like
somebody
else that's not on the team right now.
Yeah, they're able to take this money and put it into something else.
Absolutely.
Number three, they are able to convert that fourth round draft pick into something that's going to be beneficial to the team,
which you know they will.
No,
they're
I don't.
They're going to package that up with something, and you'll see. They do.
No, they're. I've lost so much confidence.
All faith in Belichick.
I've lost a lot of confidence in their drafting.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's how many players do you need from Rutgers? It's crazy.
You can never have enough players from Rutgers.
Honest to God, Rutgers is one of those like mid-level.
Yeah,
at
mid-level.
Best.
Perfect. Yeah.
College mid-level. Football programs. Yep. They're now in, I think, the Big Ten.
That's everybody's safety.
Right? And so
yes,
I'm looking at this, like, how on earth do you have all of these kids from New Jersey coming and playing for your team here?
And nobody wants that.
No, my God. Nobody wants
send
anything
back
from
to
New Jersey.
Jersey.
Going back to Jersey.
I don't think so.
And with that, friends, don't forget to hit us up on Twitter at EricAndTedICS.
And our website, EricAndTed.com, and iTunes, Eric and Ted's Ice Cream Social.
And make sure you hit us up on Facebook at facebook.com/Eric and Ted. That's going to do it for Eric and Ted's Ice Cream Social Podcast, episode number 11 for this Wednesday, August 27th, 2014. Make sure you're with us on Sunday afternoon for episode 12 of Eric and Ted's Ice Cream Social.